The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and careers. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. A lot of things have been going on right now. We just had an election, a major kind of upset for some people. We've had President Trump, President-elect Trump as of now. And then it's going to be a number of different changes, supposedly, that may happen within the federal government. A number of government people may be either happy or they may be concerned. But we've heard some stories that people are concerned, whether it be their jobs or implementation of programs or a number of different things. But today we're going to be talking about what the transition means going into a President Trump's administration. What does that mean for the federal government? And where should people be looking for either changes or improvements or maybe agencies possibly being cut? Or a number of different things that's going to happen. We're talking to Eric Katz. He is a senior correspondent at Government Executive Magazine, and he's been covering this from day one. Well, we've had him on the show before. Eric, thanks for coming back to Federal News Radio and to my show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Derek.
Hey, you've been covering this, Eric. Talk to us about what's going on in terms of, one, the overarching dynamic of, you know, what are you hearing from government agencies? I mean, you talk to different people in different administrations all the time or different agencies all the time. What are you hearing right now? What are you sensing now with the Trump administration now coming into party in 2017?
Well, you know, the agencies themselves, they're not really going to take a stance on how the election went, whether they think find it favorable or unfavorable. The agencies right now are just focused on having a smooth transition of power, bringing in new employees or new political appointees, and helping them understand and the new administration understand exactly what they do, how they do it, you know, what their day-to-day operations are like, how they're managed, and making sure that the process of, you know, the exodus of people that from the Obama administration and the new folks coming in from President-elect Trump's administration, that doesn't affect the continuity of government on a day-to-day basis. When you talk to individual federal employees or their representatives in unions or advocacy organizations, however, you know, there's a little bit more trepidation. They're a little nervous about the impact that this can have. Most of those groups had been backing and campaigning for Hillary Clinton, and they're definitely disappointed with the result. They're pledging as of now to work with the Trump administration. They want to meet with them and be able to voice their concerns and their aspirations and all those sorts of things. But they're worried about some of the things that Trump has said in the campaign trail, some of the promises that he has made. So they're, you know, trying to approach it optimistically, but with a certain degree of concern as well.
You know, we talked about Trump saying during the campaign he really didn't necessarily speak highly upon government for many different things. And he talked about a hiring freeze. What was going on when he talked about the hiring freeze, and what was he saying about government employees?
Yeah, that's actually something that he rolled out pretty late in his campaign. He, I think it was in October, mid-October or so, he gave a big speech talking about what he was going to do in his first 100 days in office. And he said on day one, he's implementing a hiring freeze across federal government. He laid out a few exemptions, national security, public health, and the military, that, you know, would not be subject to the freeze. But, you know, you're still talking about, depending on how he lays it out, because, you know, the devil will be in the details of this. It could be anywhere from half of the federal workforce exempted to far less. What we'd have to see exactly how he does it. It would not be without precedent. Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter both implemented hiring freezes across the government. So, you know, he could follow their models as far as what they look to do. You know, but it sends a message that he thinks that the federal bureaucracy is oversized and needs to be cut down. He's going to use attrition measures so that when someone leaves or, you know, retires, that position is not filled, and that's, you know, going to be presumably a very early policy that he tries to implement.
You know, when we think about this and we kind of start kind of think about the transition, and like you mentioned, previous presidents have talked about hiring freeze, but, you know, Trump has talked about a number of different programs, that whether it be building the wall or immigration, and it seems as if, and even a bigger military, it seems as if this is going to require more federal workers, or has he taken a stance on more kind of bringing on contractors, or where has he taken his kind of stance in terms of the number of people to implement some of these programs?
Yeah, it's interesting. He's not a typical small government conservative Republican. I mean, that's certainly been clear throughout the campaign. There's a lot of issues, like you mentioned, where he's actually talking about growing the size and role of government. For example, on his immigration plan, he's talked about the need to triple the size of the workforce at Immigration and Customs Enforcement, a part of the Homeland Security Department, because they would be tasked with, you know, more deportations and removals of undocumented immigrants in the country. He's talked about beefing up the Border Patrol, giving them more resources, staffing, and support. So there are certain areas of government that he, you know, he's talked about increasing the funding of the Defense Department, whether that would be on the uniform military side or the civilian side or both. We'd have to see, you know, exactly what he fights for, but he has talked about repealing spending cuts that have been in place there over the last several years. And I've talked to experts who say that some of these plans would actually require even more, significantly more spending and funding that than he's even admitting to or estimating at this time. And, you know, you look at building the wall, you know, you talk to people who are experts in that kind of contracting field, and they say that he's dramatically underestimating the cost of that. So you will have to see exactly how he shapes those plans.
And Eric, even if he tried to do this, is this something that would need congressional approval? Because, I mean, you would also need the money to do something of these sorts. I mean, so some of this stuff is going to also involve Congress passing the legislation to give him the funding to do this, right?
Well, that's absolutely right. So a couple of notes on that is, first of all, the hiring freeze, he actually does have the authority to do that unilaterally on day one, and there's really nothing any member of Congress or agency can do about it. But as far as some of the other plans, yeah, he does need Congress, but keep in mind that Republicans retained control of both the House and Senate, so he might have some friendly lawmakers that are willing to go along with what he's proposing. But a lot of this will be shaped in the appropriations process if they give him enough money to build a wall, for example, or some sort of increased barrier along the U.S.-Mexico border. You know, he's going to need funding to make all these dramatic hiring strategies at certain DHS components, and he's talked about revamping Veterans Affairs Department. That will certainly need legislative approval. So to the extent that he's laid out what he is envisioning for his presidency, there's certainly going to be some major legislative proposals that have to be debated and voted on.
We're talking about the Trump presidency and talking about the impact on the federal government as the president-elect Trump goes in January 2017. We're talking about what are going to be possible changes that we're going to see within the federal government, whether it be hiring freezes, whether there will be some things that will be implemented that were promised on the campaign trail. And we're talking about how is this going to take place as we look at the next 4 years. We've got Eric Katz. He's a senior correspondent at Government Exec Magazine. You can find him at govexec.com or Government Executive Magazine if you want to Google it. But he's written a number of different articles about Trump during the campaign and then also now as we begin transitioning to the Trump presidency, talking about what will be some of the changes. We're going to continue this conversation when we come back. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about the Trump presidency and the impact on the federal government. What changes can we expect? What kind of new things can be implemented? Will there be a dramatic change within the federal government? Hiring freezes, changes in the civil service, We've got Eric Katz on the line. He is a senior correspondent for Government Executive Magazine, and he's written a number of different articles covering Trump throughout the election cycle and now looking at the Trump presidency and the impact on the federal government. Hey, Eric, you know, we talked about the cabinet, and a lot of people have been looking at who may be some potential cabinet members, especially for some of the surrogates who've been surrounding him throughout this time period. Who are we looking at as possible cabinet members?
Well, one thing I think it's important to think about as we speculate about this is I've talked to people that know Trump well, that have been reporting on him since the 70s and 80s. And one thing that comes clear about his management style is that he likes to reward people who are loyal to him and also that are in his close, tight-knit inner circle. So if you think about on the campaign trail, he's had a pretty small group of people that have been out campaigning for him and speaking on his behalf, and those people are likely to stay by his side because that's sort of how he's run his business over the years. So you think about people like Newt Gingrich, Chris Christie, Rudy Giuliani, those types, Jeff Sessions, senator from Alabama, those types of people who have sort of been there from the get-go with him, or at least since, you know, early in the primary process, I think are likely to resurface in his administration. Ben Carson is another one. People are speculating that he could become, you know, Health and Human Services or Education, you know, Giuliani for maybe Attorney General. They're talking about the RNC chair, Reince Priebus, possibly for Chief of Staff. So I think some of the familiar names that you've seen throughout the campaign are likely to stay by his side and be part of his cabinet.
You know, when we look at kind of national security, we talked about kind of, you know, General Flynn. We talked about a number of different people. What are we looking at in terms of a national security component, in terms of national security advisor and also people who have a certain kind of mindset? Anything on there?
Yeah, well, I think you could see a lot of upheaval there. There are a lot of top military brass that were either implicitly or explicitly speaking out against Trump's candidacy. And Trump himself has said that the generals are often stupid or that he knows more than them. So he could really look to change a lot of the infrastructure there and the personnel. You know, you mentioned General Flynn. He's certainly a candidate. If he were to serve in a civilian position, I think that Congress would need to intervene on his behalf because of how recently that he was in a military position. There are certain laws preventing you from making that transition very quickly. But that's certainly a name that has been floated, and I think that he still has a lot of vetting to do in that area because he hasn't really laid out a lot of his national security policy aside from, you know, needing to have more surprise and need to be sort of more aggressive. But we'll have to see how he plays out that process. I think one thing that is pretty likely is a lot of turnover.
You know, as we think about this and kind of going forward, I was looking through your article and just kind of even thinking about it. And Trump talks about getting rid of stupid people, right? That everybody talked about the whole firing mentality of him. But you're going into a government that is very, very civil service focused. And there have been people before who have tried to change the civil service and tried to make it so that it was more performance based, that you were able to get rid of people, and not have the merit protections as much. What are we looking at in terms of Trump, and what is he saying with that?
So he has intimated to some degree that he wants to loosen those civil service laws that have been in place in the transition effort headed up by Chris Christie. Christie has talked about rooting out people in government who are loyal to President Obama. He seemed to be referring mostly to political appointees who are converted into career employees, which is there's a process for that, and there's a lot of oversight, and there's actually layers of oversight to make sure that is on the up and up. And it doesn't actually happen that often, but that's an area that I think Trump administration will be looking at. And they said that even if that requires a change in the civil service laws, that they're willing to, you know, go to Congress with that and ask for those changes. And it, really, the way that law gets written could have a major impact, because if it's not depending on how targeted it is, it could really end up being used pretty widely, and that's something that Republicans in Congress have for years fought for and advocated as something that would help bring more accountability to government and help root out the bad apples who work there. So I think that there's definitely a friendly audience for that. It's something that Trump has discussed, and he's also mentioned it at the Veterans Affairs Department. You mentioned that he has, you know, this mentality that of firing. Obviously, he's famous for his catchphrase, "You're fired," and you know, in his books, he's actually talked about how that was just something he said on TV, not something that he meant as an actual management philosophy. But you know, it's clear that he has at least expressed, you know, some degree of doing that at VA, and said that, you know, if you're not performing up to snuff at VA, you're fired. So that's what is on his campaign site, and you know, something that he'll probably look to implement.
You know, you talked about veterans a lot, and there's always two stories with the veterans. Some people say the VA has been improving significantly, and then you still always hear the horror stories, right, about, you know, veterans not getting the timely service. And so, I mean, you see these two different parallel worlds going on with the VA. You know, you have a businessman now who's running the VA. Do you think that, you know, a person like him will continue to stay with this administration, and Trump will respect that because of a business background? Or are we looking possibly at a complete redo of that team and maybe some new innovations? And there has been talk about maybe taking some of the VA services and into private practices, into scaling it out. And the VA has been worried about that. Where are we going with that with the Trump presidency?
Well, as you mentioned, Bob McDonald came from the private sector. He was the CEO of Procter & Gamble, and is now in the midst of a major overhaul of VA, one of the biggest reforms that they've had there in decades, the department has seen. And I think that maybe if there was a Clinton administration coming, he may have stayed on, because they're really in the middle of, and he's emphasized that they're just sort of, you know, getting the wheels turning on some of the major changes that he's tried to make service better, to hold the medical facilities more accountable and transparent to the veterans that rely upon them, and to make it more regionalized so that there was less being dictated from the central, you know, D.C. headquarters. All of those efforts are still underway, but I think Trump has made way too big of a deal that there needs to be made, that the VA is failing veterans, and that there's needs to be a complete overhaul. He doesn't want to see those changes fully fleshed out. He'd rather start from scratch with his own people. So I think it's I would be very surprised if McDonald stayed on. I'm not saying that it can't happen, but I think based on Trump's rhetoric, it seems that he wants a fresh start there. His advisors have talked to some degree about privatization, not necessarily eliminating VA hospitals entirely, or eliminating the network of medical facilities entirely, but a willingness to close some hospitals, or to definitely to expand the access veterans have to private care on the government's dime. You know, that's something that they tried to do in 2014 with the law that they passed then, and that has shown mixed results. So we'll have to see the appetite that Congress has to go through that process again. And if a member of Congress, if there is a proposal to close a medical facility in a member of Congress's district, they're certainly going to try to fight that. So we'll have to, you know, see if that's able to get through.
We're talking about a Trump presidency and the impact on the federal government. What can we expect as we go into 2017? What can we expect for these upcoming 4 years as President-elect Trump is going to take office, going in and with a number of different promises that he's made to the people who voted for him about a number of different changes with the federal government? We're talking about this right now with Eric Katz. He's a senior correspondent at Government Executive Magazine. You can find that at govezec.com or just Google Government Executive Magazine. He's written a number of different articles that you'll find about Trump during the campaign, and then also talking about his presidency upcoming, possible candidates who are going to be in his cabinet, possible changes he's going to make with the civil service, possible hiring freezes that he's talked about during the campaign trail. Are these going to be true, or are these was just talk? We're trying to determine that right now. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we have been talking to Eric Katz. He's a senior correspondent at Government Executive Magazine, and he's written about Donald Trump, the president-elect, and talking about what is possible impact on the federal government, talking about what changes can we expect. A number of different federal employees and people in the military have heard a number of different things, whether it be VA or whether it be Homeland Security or the intel community or whoever the case is. There are a number of different people wondering what is going to happen with the president-elect Trump as he gets into office in January 2017. We're talking about that right now. You know, Eric, I was just, you know, reading different articles about the intel community, and there seemed to be, you know, as you mentioned, agencies won't take an official stance, but private rumblings about concerns about the intel community, and also just even the dynamics with Russia and everything else. What are you hearing? What's the stance with Trump as he begins going in? And is it going to be a good relationship with the intel community? Are we talking about an overhaul? Are we talking about more people in intelligence? What are we looking at?
Well, it's interesting because he's definitely starting off on sort of rocky footing. He's voiced distrust of them throughout his campaign. He, you know, famously has rejected their conclusion that Russia has meddled with in the hacking of the DNC and some other influences that the intelligence community has concluded that the Russian government has been involved in. So he's talked about the need for better intelligence, but at the same time has, you know, sort of criticized those career employees and those institutions that and the work that they have done and the conclusions that they have drawn. So. You know, he could definitely, we could see some new blood there and think that he's going to look to find new people that would try to match what his preconceived notions.
You know, as we kind of think about this, there have been a number of different people in the intel community. Some people have stayed, you know, past presidents, and you know, sometimes there has been kind of, you know, precedent set that there have been people who stayed on with other, other presidents when the new office came in, Democratic or Republican. Do we see that? Do we see possibly Brennan or Clapper possibly staying on? Or do you think with Mike Flynn and everything else, there's going to be a complete overhaul of the intel community?
Right. Well, that's an interesting question. You know, for example, Jim Comey, who has been in so much news in the last few weeks of the election, he was a Bush appointee who Obama renominated and stayed on, and he's serving a 10-year term. That doesn't mean that Trump can't fire him, but I think that he likely will, based on how much he's criticized Comey throughout the campaign trail. So that, you know, we could see some new blood at the FBI. As far, you know, as Clapper, maybe, you know, you could see Michael Flynn in that sort of role. He used to be the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, so he has that sort of experience. My general instinct would be that throughout government, Trump will try to shake things up as much as possible on the personnel front. You know, he's talked about getting rid of people who are loyal to Obama, and in his mind, I think maybe anyone that has served in the Obama administration would probably fall into that that description.
You know, when we hear about kind of ripping up Obamacare, we talk about kind of ripping up the ACA. What agencies are going to be impacted by that, Eric? You know, if you talk about kind of ripping up something that's already in place and already providing services for a number of different people and completely, you know, changing the legislation and throwing it out, what will be the impact on that on different agencies and then also some people?
Right. Well, yeah, I think the HHS and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid have really taken the forefront of implementing that law. So they would have major shakeups in sort of the services they've provided to states. And on the federal level, they've obviously had a huge program to implement healthcare.gov and to deliver funding and grants to the states as they have implemented their state-based plans and expanded Medicaid and all of that. So the dismantling process would probably be maybe less burdensome, but still a significant act that those employees who were there to build it up would have to go through once again to take it down. And that would, of course, you know, there's about 22 million people who are enrolled on various plans at the state level or at the federal level through the Affordable Care Act, who, you know, would have to find alternative means of health insurance if that were the path that Trump decides to go down.
Right. You know, I was reading your article talking about NASA and what Trump has said about kind of NASA and the space program. Does he have a particular stance in terms of NASA and space and kind of thinking of where that should go?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we talked earlier about how Trump is not a typical small government conservative. There's been a lot of proposals he's had that it would increase the size and scope of government. And this is another example. I think it falls sort of into his idea of making America great. Again, you know, President Obama has cut the shuttle program for NASA, and he thinks that that was a big mistake. He wants to restore it, increase funding for NASA to help, you know, recreate the notion of American exceptionalism. So that's one area where we could see that. You know, he's talked about how we need to make our national parks great and that we should keep federal control of, you know, especially in the western states where a lot of the land is controlled by the federal government, and that's something that conservatives have really been disappointed in, have been trying to change. But Trump has, at least on a preliminary basis, talked about the need to keep that at the federal level. So, you know, there's some examples there where he's actually praising government and its ability to do good work.
You know, I'm thinking about education as well. I mean, as we look at, you know, we talked about these STEM programs, that's NASA and everything else, but then we've talked about education and STEM and the need for America to kind of, you know, get back on the science, technology, engineering, math, and put those programs, which would also, again, benefit a program like NASA with more scientists and researchers and other people like that. But there has been a call in terms of kind of changing education and the Department of Education and some regulations. What's been the cause on that?
Well, you know, Republicans have for a long time targeted the Education Department as an area that, you know, the federal government does not need to be involved in, and therefore the department does not have to.
And Eric, as a matter of fact, some people want to get rid of the Department of Education, right? I mean, some people called for completely eradicating that agency.
And Trump has sort of flirted with that idea. I think he's talked about it in the past. You know, the underlying idea being that education should be determined at the local level. The federal government should not be issuing any sort of mandates for how those, you know, individual school districts or states should be conducting their education programs. I think that, you know, to some degree that ignores the nature of the education department, which is simply to provide block grants to states and local jurisdictions. So it would be interesting to see how that plays out. It's actually, you know, as far as making an impact on the federal budget and debt, you know, the Education Department is a very minor part of that, and it's a pretty small agency, something like only a few thousand employees, and not really on the same scale as, you know, some of those, you know, Defense Department, Homeland Security, Health and Human Services, Veterans Affairs, those sorts of big departments. But you know, Trump has consistently talked about how much he doesn't like Common Core, and that, you know, the
wants more charter schools and
So the Education Department is sort of a scapegoat for for some of those policies. So we could definitely see some movement there to try to either cut entirely, which logistically would be extremely difficult, or at least, you know, slash funding for that department.
We're talking about a Trump presidency, talking about the impact of the president-elect Donald Trump, and what will there be the impact on the federal government? What will be the changes that are going on? He's mentioned a number of different things about kind of federal government and really a lot of big government programs, but also then talking about scaling back the number of federal workers who are hired. So there's kind of a contrast in the messages right there, because the number of different things that he's mentioned will require the federal government to have a number of different people to work on these programs, whether it be infrastructure, whether it be building a wall, whether it be military programs, whether it be space programs. There's going to be a need for government workers to really work on that kind of stuff. We're trying to figure that out today. We've been talking with Eric Katz. He's been monitoring this. He's been reporting on this for Government Executive Magazine. You can find it at govezec.com or just Google Government Executive Magazine and then look for Eric's articles. But he's been really kind of keeping an eye and keeping a pulse of what's happening with this campaign. And now, since Donald Trump has been elected, trying to figure out where he's going to go in terms of his presidency. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about the Trump presidency. We've been talking about President-elect Donald Trump and his really kind of impact on the federal government. A number of different things have been proposed during this campaign, this very, very heated campaign. But now we're talking about the implementation of possibly some of his ideas and his policies that are going to really impact the federal government. Much of what he wants to do requires federal employees to work on certain things. But during the campaign, the rhetoric has not always been the greatest about federal employees. And so we're trying to find out what is going to actually take place when things go into effect. We're talking to Eric Katz. He's been covering this for Government Executive Magazine. He's a senior correspondent there, and he's been covering this from day one since this election has been going on, and taking a look at Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and what their opinions were and what their ideas were. But now that we're past the election, he's written a new article about the Trump presidency and where things may go from there. You know, Eric, when we're looking at this and kind of thinking about certain things, Donald Trump, and I think a lot of people really kind of, it resonated with them. He talked about term limits, right, for Congress and people within Congress. What are you hearing about that? I've heard there's already some pushback on that from members of Congress. He's talked about making sure that they only have 2-4 years or whatever, 6-year term limits, and then they're done. You know, where are we hearing that go?
Yeah, I think that would be something that would be hard for members of Congress to sort of put a limit on themselves, especially those that
have been there forever,
for decades. You know, they're going to put themselves out of a job.
Right.
So I think, you know, it's something that you hear often on the campaign trail, because people like, you know, hearing about accountability and bringing more oversight and to members of Congress. So, you know, and he framed it as sort of an ethical conversation about ways to make government more accountable to voters and, you know, more on the straight and narrow. So, you know, it's something that we've heard before, and I don't think it's probably very likely to go far.
You know, as we kind of talk about this, and some people, you know, depending on what side you've been talking, but some people have kind of mentioned this as kind of an election of a number of different ideas, but not really understanding government and understanding and even kind of ripping up executive orders and everything else, but not understanding that government just does not kind of run that way. I mean, do you think that that has been the case in terms of a lot of the promises that have been made? You've been covering government for a long time, but a lot of things, even when President Obama, a lot of his stuff did not get through, even when he had both the House and the Senate when he first got in, because there was pushback. Are we kind of coming up on the same situation right now, that the Democrats have now said, hey, we're not going to let some of this stuff pass?
Yeah, you know, I think every president comes in without a really full idea of exactly what they're allowed to do and where their power is restricted. And Trump's even more so because of his background in business and not really having any involvement in government before this. So, you know, I've talked to some political management experts on this subject, and they've really expecting some rough seas in the early going for Trump, for his administration, because he's going to take the first 100 days when a lot of presidents are trying to implement the most important parts of their policies, and he's going to be, you know, figuring out the ins and outs of how government works. And I think every president and every administration has to go through that, and he'll be going through it even more so. And then, you know, it trickles down to all levels. When at each agency, at each department, there's new appointees coming in, and they have to learn the way things work at that agency and the way things work in government, and that might not be typical for their experience, especially if Trump is set on bringing in businessmen and women, like he's talked about on the campaign trail. They'll have a pretty steep learning curve. You know, and part of that is over the next couple of months and in the transition that they try to get prepared for that. And the Obama administration is committed, has said that they're committed to making sure that they help ease that process and make sure that things are, they're able to get hit the ground running on day one. But, you know, there's always some sort of lag time there. And especially, as you mentioned, you know, things don't just happen at the flip of a switch. A lot of the times you need to legislate and convince members and twist arms, and that takes a long time.
You know, with this being the case, how are you hearing that the transition? I know GSA has been really working. They've set up these transition teams and everything else. Have we seen a better process in terms of the transition and really getting people in place to really kind of make this the transfer of power seamless?
Yeah, I think there's no question. Well, and first of all, you know, the Bush administration actually got a lot of praise for the way that they handled the transition in 2008. You've heard Obama talk about that pretty consistently, and that, you know, they set a good example. But it's been even more institutionalized since then, because Congress passed and Obama has signed a new law that dictates how that process has to go. And it, you know, puts career employees at the front and center. There's now a career employee at GSA who's in charge of the whole transition, and each agency and each component of each agency has a career official who is in charge of the transition efforts at just that agency. They're making briefing documents for the transition team. They're helping to sort out exactly what appointees, what positions need to be, have new appointees. So that process is, you know, and that's been underway for months and months. The Trump team and the Clinton's team as well have had federal office space that has been federally funded for the last couple of months, that where they've been meeting and discussing all these issues and working out what sort of appointees and what sort of personnel that they want in these positions. And that effort has expanded starting yesterday. They gave the Trump team a lot bigger space, GSA has, and gave them a lot more funding to pay for their transition employees. So all of that process has been underway and is ramping up.
You know, Eric, when we look at the federal unions, there's a number of different unions out there representing different groups. What are they feeling right now? You know, there's talk that there may be some battles, you know, with the federal unions and other things like that, kind of going into 2017. What are we seeing? What are the unions saying right now?
Right. Well, right now they're keeping it pretty calm. They're trying to stay measured. They're, like I think I mentioned earlier, they're definitely disappointed, but I think that we will probably see some battles. The Republicans have talked about for years the need to rein in federal employee unions. They have too much power, even though they can't, you know, there's a lot of restrictions on what they can actually collectively bargain over, but, you know, maybe too much lobbying power on Capitol Hill and that sort of thing. So I think we're likely to see some pushback there. You've heard it from the Trump team. Newt Gingrich, who's one of Trump's top surrogates, you know, a top choice to possibly serve in his cabinet, has talked about, you know, seeing what we saw at the state level, where some governors, especially Scott Walker in Wisconsin, sought to strip the union rights of state government employees. Newt Gingrich talked about seeing that at the federal level, and the same kind of pushback possibly from unions. And and they're not going to go quietly into the night. So we could definitely see some battles in the Trump administration if he decides to pursue that. But like I said, for now they're taking a measured approach. They're saying let's work together, let's find areas of common ground. This is coming from the union leaders saying Trump have talked about making government work better. We want to make government work better, so let's find areas of agreement where we can make that happen.
Got about 30 seconds, Eric, real quick. What are we expecting with the management style, real quick, in terms of Trump?
So yeah, just real quickly, he's not someone that likes to dive into details. At his business, he didn't get involved in the day-to-day operations. He's more of a delegator, coming up with the broad idea and then having that carried out by others that he has entrusted to do that.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, Eric. As we kind of go into 2017, we're going to have you back as we start looking at the Trump presidency and then taking the transition from the Obama administration and then starting taking control of a government and seeing what's going on. I know you're going to be monitoring it, so we're going to want to get your insight as we go into the new year. Thank you so much for being on the show.
All right, Derek. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.